put the blame on me.
Historian Felix Bunnell is here. He is brought to us by the King County Library System. Good morning. Happy Independence Day, Felix.
Same to you.
So you're going to mark the 129th year since the city of Ellensburg went up in flames, basically.
How joyous.
Wow. And it was very mysterious circumstances,
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, because about a month ago, we looked at the anniversary of the Great Seattle Fire, which is, you know, kind of humdrum. A carpenter set some glue on fire. Everyone kind of knows that story. But, you know, it was a busy summer that year, 1889, for fires all over what was then Washington Territory. So one of these big fires was over in Ellensburg. It was on July 4th, 1889. You know, Ellensburg burned, that was the very same day that the Washington Constitutional Convention got underway in Olympia, as we were about to become a state and pick a place for the state capital. So lots of stuff was going on this day, 129 years ago. Ellensburg wanted to be the state capital. Can you imagine the state capital in the center of the state, how different that would be without Olympia? North Yakima wanted to be the capital, too. So
maybe
anyway.
The east side of the state wouldn't feel so left out if it was that way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Olympia, of course, wanted to keep the capital. They'd been the territorial capital. So, We know the cause of the Seattle fire. We know the cause of the Spokane fire a month later, but Ellensburg's a little different. The cause of this fire is something of a mystery, and some might even say a conspiracy. Sadie Thayer is director of the Kittitas County Historical Museum. You know, it's generally agreed by those who know that the fire in Ellensburg began by a mercantile store ran by a guy named J.S. Anthony. Pencil that name down. We're going to get back to him in a minute. You remember the name J.S. Anthony? Anyway, Sadie ran me through several theories about the possible causes. Fireworks, insurance fraud, faulty electricity, striking miners, vagrants displaced by the Seattle fire, disgruntled Native Americans, disgruntled Chinese, even a disgruntled circus that had set up their tent on the edge of town. Well, they tried to, but the wind made it impossible.
That's an awful lot of disgruntling.
I know. Everyone should be taking notes on this story. It's a little hard to follow. But being a hard-hitting history journalist, I cut right to the chase and asked Sadie Thayer who she thought was responsible for causing the Ellensburg fire.
I personally look at the vagrants coming in from Seattle. Seattle burned in June. We burned in July, and Spokane burned in August. So even though we know the cause of Seattle's fire, people look at, was there some connection between three locations and a fire, you know, an arsonist?
So what you're telling me is even in 1889, people of Eastern Washington were already blaming Western Washington for all their problems.
Yeah.
So for the most sensational theory of the bunch, yes, Sadie hooked me up with a retired Tacoma Fire Department investigator named Charlie Hansen. Hansen lives over on Vashon Island these days. He spent many years studying the Ellensburg fire, and he's convinced it was intentionally set.
The reason I can reach back in history and say it was definitely on purpose is because that later that night, somebody left these red cards in the yards of some of the prominent citizens. And these red cards had a couple of sayings on them. One of them was, "You show no mercy, we have no pity."
So the cards actually said, "You have no pity, we show no mercy." But either way, it's a creepy message. But the presence of the red cards doesn't really prove anything irrefutably. Maybe somebody was just pulling an opportunistic prank, or maybe it really was arson and the arsonist distributed the cards. You know, it's really impossible to prove 129 years later. And oddly enough, there's no examples of the red cards in the collection of the Kittitas Museum, or in any collection anywhere. They just, if they did exist, they disappeared. And there's no list of the so-called prominent families who found them on their charred lawns 129 years ago. It's a little murky to me. But regardless of that, Charlie Hansen has done plenty of thinking about the Ellensburg fire and what a tragedy it could have been. For instance, hundreds of people were right next door at a dance near J.S. Anthony's store where the fire started. Slight difference in the wind, and there could have been hundreds of deaths. Charlie Hansen says, and he thinks a motive like this might point to a culprit.
But who would do something so nasty, right? So you think about it, some rival. And so I cannot eliminate political rival. And who had the most to lose? It wasn't Yakima.
You going to make me connect the dots, or are you going to say it?
I always wonder about Olympia interests.
Uh-huh,
so there
politics.
We go. Blaming the West Side for the East Side's troubles yet again. No, it's nothing new under the sun. So make this clear. Charlie Hansen wonders if someone who wanted to keep the capital in Olympia decided to try and burn down Ellensburg to take them out of the running. It's a fascinating theory, and I would love it if someone has a red card in a book somewhere. Maybe there is a red card out there we could turn up by having the story today. But there's one more theory. Remember J.S. Anthony? Sadie Thayer spoke many years ago with an Ellensburg man who was well over 100 years old. He's now deceased. He had this to say.
J.S. Anthony, who had the store that the fire started in, was also quite the ladies' man. So there was a question, did a jilted lover or the spouse of a mistress or whatnot, did either he or she burn the store down as a response to love that spiraled out of control.
You mean a burning passion?
Yes.
So I always say it's okay to joke about fires where nobody was killed. See, no one was killed in the Seattle fire or the Ellensburg fire, so we can make these goofy jokes about
Already.
It.
Already, wow.
And one more thing, if that wasn't enough about J.S. Anthony, who forget the red cards, I think it's J.S. Anthony. He was known to have a moonshine still in his basement, and that might have exploded as causing the fire. So who knows?
So we got booze, girls, politics, could be anything.
And I think the only theory that didn't come up was that a Sasquatch piloted a UFO into J.S. Anthony's store. That's the theory I'm going to start promoting.
One.
If you have one, send one to us
or
at 98973. Could have been some sort of parachute. But yeah, if your family has connections to 19th century Ellensburg, go look in the family Bible. Shake it really hard. Maybe a red card will fall out that says, "You show no mercy, we have no pity."
Or
"We have no pity, you show no mercy." Yeah, I would love for this story to turn up some evidence of what happened 129 years ago today on July 4th, 1889 in Ellensburg.
Fascinating. Thank you, Felix.
Thank you.
Have a lovely day.
You too.
Now it's time for our Sports Insider from 710 ESPN, brought to you by Western Washington Toyota Dealers. Danny O'Neill, I hear you have an opinion about the 4th of July hot dog eating contest.
I'm not a fan.
Not a fan.
I think it's gross.
You don't think it's a sport?
Well, I definitely don't think it's a sport. And I think it is. How it has become some sort of staple is horrifying to me.
Because people get together and they eat massive amounts of food in a free country, for gosh sakes.
Now, that part I can get behind.
Okay.
The part that I can't get behind is the, let's see how many hot dogs and buns you can stuff in your face in 20 minutes.
It's become a little extreme. Yeah.
It's gross. I think it's gross.
Okay. So my question to you then is, if you were to participate in any sort of eating contest, if you had to choose, what would it be? Because I looked up a few other than the Nathan's
pies.
Hot dog contest. A pie
pies.
Is a good one.
I would go with
there
pies.
Was a recent oyster eating contest. And I think it was something like 300 or 400. I'm going to have to Google it, but it was extreme. Would you do that one?
I love oysters. If I was forced to do an eating, it would probably be something sweet as opposed to
cupcakes.
Cupcakes
There's
I could do.
There's a cupcake eating contest.
Yeah.
Jalapeno poppers.
Yeah.
Cheese steaks.
Yeah, it just all sounds gross. I did a hot dog eating contest once.
Did you?
Yeah, at Safeco Field.
What was your style?
I didn't have any sort of, I wasn't dunking the bun and squeezing out, because that's what they do.
Uh-huh.
They dunk the bun into water,
so
squeeze
soggy.
It down to minimize the amount of space it takes up. I made an error early on of trying to swallow too big a bite of hot dog without sufficiently chewing.
Did they Heimlich you?
No, it wasn't that bad, but I felt it move all the way down my esophagus.
Yeah, that's painful when you're stretching your
felt
esophagus.
Felt like a snake as it went through there. That was unpleasant.
You had a traumatic experience, and I think that's why you don't like the hot dog.
Unrelated. I didn't like it before that either.
Can we even call it eating, though? Because when you watch, if you've never watched the eating contest, you must this year just to observe what Danny's talking about. Can you call it eating? It's more like hot dogs sliding down
swallowing.
Your throat. They don't even chew. They just sort of like a snake, just move it down their throat with their muscle.
They bite it into like sort of swallowable portions is the style. It's like a conveyor belt is the best way to describe
it. It's America, people.
No.
America.
This is not the image we want.
Changing topics. I hear Robinson Cano is actually doing batting practice at Safeco Field. Last time I heard he had gotten trouble for using a banned substance.
That's correct. He's still suspended. He's got 80 games that he's got to miss, and then he'll be able to come back for about the final 40 games, so about the last month and a half of the season. He was also rehabilitating a broken finger. He had that. He was hit on the hand, or I guess a broken bone in his hand. It wasn't a finger. His fifth metacarpal. Struck, hit. He's healed. I believe he's back in the Dominican Republic through the All-Star break, but then will return. But yeah, he is on track to return. It's an interesting question of what they'll do when he comes back. He's their best hitter.
They've been doing fine without him.
Their offense has been worse without him than it was with him. His absence has had an effect there. But Dee Gordon has moved from center field to second base, which is where Cano plays. And do you move Dee Gordon back to center field when that comes in? That kind of makes sense because Guillermo Heredia, who's playing center field right now, doesn't really fit there. He's struggling as an everyday player right now at the plate. But you've also got the question of Robinson Cano can't play in the playoffs. So if you make the playoffs,
right,
how much of a move? You're probably going to then move D. Gordon back to second base for the playoffs because he's ineligible.
Mess with that mix, though?
And that's a great question. And you do, because he's a good enough hitter that you're going to find a place. But I think that you're going to see where he spends some time at second, some time at DH maybe, some time at first base, and then you have D. Gordon also playing some second base.
Rewind just a little bit, because you said Cano can't play in the playoffs?
That's correct. Because he was suspended,
he's
ineligible.
Oh, it reaches all the way into the playoffs.
So he misses 80 games plus ineligible for the playoffs.
I missed that part.
So he'll come back, and then he'll go.
Okay.
Hopefully he'll go, because that would mean the Mariners are in the playoffs, which they should be. They've won 8 in a row.
Yes, and they beat the Angels, who aren't terrible either.
No, Angels are not bad, but they're the fourth-place team now in what's the best division in baseball, the American League West. You can walk with your chest proud a little bit about this. Four teams that have a winning record that are there. Shohei Ohtani came back to hit last night. Didn't matter. Wade LeBlanc didn't quite LeBlanc them, but 4-1, very impressive. He got a new contract. He's going to be with the team next year. Everybody's very excited.
When's the last time we have done this well this early? I'm trying to remember.
2007, they were pretty good. But 2007, that was later in the season that they got to this point where they were 20 games above 500.
Remember the year they won 116?
Yeah, I mean, that's we're getting back to that sort of level. Yeah, this team's not that good.
Okay.
This team's not as good enough to win 116 games like that 2001 team is. But they're good enough to win 100.
Say that, Danny. Put that out into the universe so that they hear it and they challenge it and they come back and prove you wrong.
Good. Yeah, I'd love to be wrong about that. That'd be fantastic to be wrong about that.
And then go grab a hot dog and eat it in a normal fashion.
Yes. So,
what do you put on your hot dog?
Put on some, I've become a relish advocate.
Oh,
early in my life, I hated pickles.
Sweet dill. Sweet.
Yeah, I like sweet.
Yeah,
Chicago dog, I think, is the best hot dog. I'm a fan of the Seattle dog with cream cheese on it.
Me
I know
too.
That's heretical.
Grilled onions. What do you put on it though? Ketchup or barbecue sauce?
Ketchup. I'm not a barbecue sauce on my hot dog.
Yeah. I put everything. It's like ketchup. A meal for me. I do mustard, ketchup, relish, onions. I'll put
a little lettuce.
On a hot dog.
A little. Yeah.
Some people believe ketchup doesn't belong on a hot dog.
What?
Yeah. There's people that believe that's true. I'm going to have a hot dog today. I'm going down to the ball game.
Yeah. Have fun. Yeah. Happy 4th.
You too.
Yeah. America.
All right. What's the future of affirmative action under the Trump administration? A shift in policy suggests that schools will have the government's blessing to leave race out of admissions and enrollment decisions. We called up CBS White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy to explain.
It didn't entirely come out of the blue. I mean, there were some signals even last year that this was in the offing. And, you know, the views of the Trump administration about affirmative action are most closely aligned, I'd say, with the George W. Bush policy, which is to say that race shouldn't be a factor in admissions. The Obama administration took a different tack. They recognized what the law calls a compelling interest that a school might have in putting together a racially diverse student body, which the Supreme Court has upheld. But they issued guidance that the Trump administration says went too far in pushing that, encouraging it, as opposed to acknowledging it. And the Trump administration has revoked what are called Dear Colleague letters or guidance that goes out from the Departments of Education and Justice to school administrators, essentially saying, here's a way you won't run afoul of the law, and here's a way you won't wind up in court having to defend your actions if you follow these guidelines. Well, that guidance has been revoked by the Trump administration, and now administrators, as they were during George W. Bush's presidency, will be encouraged to use an admissions process that is racially neutral.
All right. Hey, any word on what the president plans to do this Independence Day?
Well, he's, as far as I know, having a pretty low-key morning. I'm not aware of any other plans other than his intent to have friends and supporters on the South Lawn of the White House to watch the fireworks over the National Mall tonight. Mm.
I don't think yesterday we got to talk to you, Stephen, about the visit from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to North Korea. Is the White House's stance still that North Korea no longer poses a nuclear threat despite these reports that they're still developing that arsenal?
That seems to be the president's view. In fact, yesterday he issued a tweet in which he said if it weren't for him, well, then we'd already be at war. He said that it is going well. All of Asia is thrilled. And this is a quote I'll read. Only the opposition party, which includes the fake news, is complaining. You're right. The Secretary of State has been dispatched for another round of talks with Kim Jong-un. Next week, the president will head to Brussels to meet with the NATO partners. After that, he's meeting with Vladimir Putin. He'll also meet with the Prime Minister of Great Britain. There's so much going on the world stage. And increasingly, the thinking is, amongst the president's detractors at least, that the president is cozying up to dictators and alienating America's allies. The White House obviously doesn't like that phrasing, and they say that, look, President Trump has been just as tough on, for example, Vladimir Putin as Barack Obama was, if not more so, if you look quantitatively at the sanctions that this administration has imposed.
But you got to admit that Mr. Trump's been clashing a bit with our NATO allies, right?
Well, there's no question that what you're hearing from this president is vastly different from what you've heard from past presidents in this regard. Even in the last week or so, the ruminations that the U.S. might abandon the World Trade Organization, the WTO. The president says, no, we're not going to do that, but the WTO countries had better treat us more fairly or else something's going to happen. Now, the White House hasn't explained what might happen. But this is what's so alarming to business interests and farmers, exporters, the idea that under President Trump, the U.S. would back away from the international trading order established after World War II to maintain peace and stability in the global economy. That's very worrisome to people who have a real, interest in that stability.
And what's your take on if EPA head Scott Pruitt is actually on his way out? I keep seeing he's got to go, and then, no, he seems to escape any sort of scandal and stay in his job, even though many people have left the White House.
Well, you're right about that, that many people have left the White House. And all I can say about this is that the president has said that Scott Pruitt is doing an effective job at the Environmental Protection Agency in rolling back regulations, most specifically. There was a report overnight, which Pruitt denies, that he pushed for the president to fire Jeff Sessions and install him as Attorney General. Again, as I say, Pruitt formally denies that report. These were rumors that went back into the spring when Pruitt was first coming under fire for, look at the list of various things that he's come under fire for.
Yes.
But at the time, the president said that Pruitt was doing a good job at EPA and essentially should stay at EPA. In fact, he issued a tweet flatly denying those reports back in April. But last night, CNN reported in greater detail just how this would have played out in the spring, where Sessions would have been fired and then Pruitt would have been installed but not confirmed and would have served 210 days. And you wonder, why would that be? Well, that's the limit under what's called the Vacancies Reform Act, where an acting head of a cabinet department can serve without Senate confirmation until their acting term is up. And then it's reported by CNN that Pruitt would go back to Oklahoma, where he's from, and run for office there. As I say, Pruitt says the story's false.
That's CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy.